Continuing on the bottom of Tadi Chedem Zed, the Gemara is discussing the position of Rav Asi. Rav Asi qualifies the Mishnah and says that the only time that we say that the Umnim are Chayabim, that's once they got a finished product. If they took a finished product and then they did damage to a finished product, then they're responsible for the product that they destroyed. On the other hand, if they got raw materials, then constructed a product, and then destroyed it, the shevach kli belongs to the uman, belongs to the craftsman, and any additional value added by changing the raw materials into a finished product really belongs to him, and when he breaks it, he's breaking his own object. Now that will cause him to lose out on his labor, meaning that he won't get compensated for the work he did, but on the other hand, he doesn't have to compensate the balim for the kli that he destroyed. That was the statement of Vasu. We tried to bring a proof from our Mishnah, right, that against him and then possibly for him. And we said that the Mishnah is inconclusive with regards to this. It's not Mukhrach in either direction as to how to read the Mishnah. Now, how we might start at the bottom of Tadi Chedem Zed, name of Messiah. A note in Semra that Taba, person gives wool to a dyer, Vikvicho Yoreh, and then he burns it or he ruins it in the cauldron. Note in Lo Demet Tamaro, he gives him, compensates him for the wool that he destroyed. Now, the Mei Tmaroin, he gives him the value of the wool, Aval, the Mei Tmaro B'Shvacho, look, right? He does not give him the value of the Temer plus the dyed wool. Tmar says, Lav, isn't the case here, that the wool was burnt or ruined after the dye took hold? So he was boiling it, the dye takes hold, and then he overboils it, he does something wrong, and it burns. So that means that the wool already went from a stage of being just plain wool to dyed wool, and then to destroy. So that sounds like a vast, because even though he's increased the value from wool to dyed wool, he still only compensates for raw wool. Zika shevachak, so there is shevach here, and nevertheless, he's only paying for the tzemer, which mamina, uman kona b'shevachli, which is what we're after here, basically, at these positions, that the uman owns the Shevach HaKli. So Amar Shmuel, how come I skin on? Why do you have to say that? Let's say the case here is going to Zicho B'Shad Nefila. No, that he destroyed the wool, he did damage to the wool at the time that the dye was taking hold. The Lech HaShvacha. In that case, there is no Shevach to talk about here, and there's only Dmei Tzemer.
Well, like it burns immediately.
Right. Aval, Lehi Zicho Achar Nefila. But had it been the other way, meaning that the other alternative, which is that it actually burned after the dye took hold, Mai, what would be the din? No din, lo demei tmaro, shvacho. That he would have paid them both, the tzemer and the shevach. He would be responsible for both of them. So lema Shmuel lately the Rav Asi. Sounds like Shmuel doesn't hold over Rav Asi. He's giving the opposite interpretation of that Mishnah, which would bring you to the opposite conclusion from that of Rav Asi. So I'm going to call Shmuel. No, the case here is going to Tzemer Usmanim de Balabayit. That not only is the Tzemer belong to the owner, but also the dye. The product of the dye belongs to the owner. Vitzeva Agrayadehu. And the Tzeva, all he has, Vitzeshakil. The only thing that he's taking is like a poel. He's working as a poel. He's providing no raw materials. All he's doing is putting them together and cooking them up. So he's not the one generating any of the Tzeva. It doesn't sound like a good explanation, because if that's the case, if he ruined it, but he not only would he owe him the wool, he'd also owe him the dye, because he ruined the dye and the wool, so he'd owe him both items back. Shmuel's not making a statement of fact. Shmuel is just saying that it's inconclusive, or it's not mukhrach, that this Mishnah supports the position of Rav Asi. Not that Shmuel himself says, I don't hold to the position of Rav Asi. I'm just saying that if you want to bring a proof from this Mishnah, that is not a proof, because I could read the Mishnah in such a fashion or such a manner that would not necessarily be a proof or a proof, or not either a disproof to Rav Asi. I'm not saying it's mukhlaf either way. I'm just saying don't bring any conclusion from this Mishnah. So Tashma, another chance to look in this. And Notain Tali Tolu Uman, someone gives over his beged to a artisan, Gamro, Veholdio. He finished working on whatever he was supposed to do for this beged, and then he lets him know that it's ready. From now until 10 days. Right? The restriction of lo talim, you're not allowed to leave over the wages of a day laborer. If he works for you the day, you must pay him that night, but the next morning he has to have his pay in hand. Here, if a uman, an artisan, works and then calls you up and says your stuff is ready, you don't have to be there that day to pick it up. If you don't pick it up, even up to 10 days, I mean, that's literally 10 days, but any amount of time, you are not in violation of lo tavlein pulat tachir. If he gives it to him halfway through the day, he actually hands it to him. Not that he informs him, but he actually handed it to him. As soon as the sun sets on that day, then he's in violation of Baltalin, because he gave him the work on the daytime, and he's got to pay him that day. Right, says, wait, that's the key difference. What's the difference between when you're chayav for Baltalin and when you're not chayav for Baltalin? That depends if you're a kablan or if you're a tchir yom. If you're a tchir yom, if you're just simply a wage earner, then you've got to pay the same day. If you're a contractor, if you're a kablan and you're a contractor, then there's no violation of lo talin.
That's the difference.
Well, that will be the, not in this mission, that would be the difference. Why? Because of the principle that we establish is that uman is kone b'shevach kli. When uman is kone b'shevach kli, that means when you're a contractor, right, then whatever improvements that you have generated do not become possession, do not become a obligation upon the bala bayit to pay for it, but rather belong to the uman himself. So if they belong to the uman himself, you don't have to, you shouldn't have to pay him, because until you take possession of the item and he gives it to you, so you pay him, it's not yours. It belongs to the uman. So there'll be no violation of lo talin. Now this is a problem for Varasi. Problem for Varasi is that's not what this, right, that's not what this not what this mishnah says, because what? Once he gave it to him, he's chayav for lo talin. That should not be the case. That's Varasi. He talked about uman kone b'sheva kli. If you believe that an uman is called Nebisheva Kali, that he's really a contractor, am I aware Bishum Baal Kalin? How could you ever be in violation of Baal Kalin? The way a contractor works is that he owns the Shevach HaKali, according to Ravasi. If he owns the Shevach HaKali, that means that until you pay for it, it's in possession of the uman. That means you can't ever be in violation of Baal Kalin when you're dealing with a contractor. Shechir Yom, yes. But a contractor, no. So it must be that Ravasi is wrong. And that an uman is not kone b'sheva kli. If an uman is not kone b'sheva kli, then the way that an uman, or craftsman, is getting paid, is he's getting paid like a shechir yom. He's getting paid like someone who is working as a day laborer, and that's why when he gives you the object, automatically all the shechir, the shechar that you owe him, comes due. And therefore you're in violation of Baal Kalin if you leave it until the evening. So Amar Rav Mari, Breit Rav Kahana, Begarad the Sarvogot. Now we're talking about a garda de sarvala de lecha shvacha, that there is no shevach. What is a garda de sarvala? Garda de sarvala sounds, a garda means a weaver or somebody who works with clothing. Garda de sarvala sounds like someone who smooths out clothing. Now he does some sort of a pressing or smoothing out of the clothing. So here there is no shevach in the kli, meaning that he does work, but the kli itself does not acquire any more value. There's no extra value that's added into the kli. Right? So. Then why are you helping Yali? I mean, in the end, well, if he's not doing anything, why are you giving it to him, right? Right, why are you paying him for it? So it says, you're sending it over to him to soften the clothing, to soften or to work on this clothing. If he smooths it or he softens the clothing, then he has added value here, and he has changed the dynamic, right, or the value of this cleat. And therefore, he should be like a uman that's kone b'sheva kli. So that can't be the explanation. Lo, tzricha de agre le bitche, that he hired him to stomp on it. Bitche b'mato. Each stomp is worth one ma'ah. Dehainu schivut. It's literally a day laborer. Now Rashi explains over here what is a le bituche, a batash is to kick, right? To kick someone. So batash is a stomping on it. Stepping. And Rashi says here is uscharo the darka. He hired him to stomp on it, to step on it. Vehit na'ima. He conditions with him. Skuma drichot. He says, I will pay you per stomp. Pol dricha bima'ah. Every stomp will be worth one ma'ah. Tzchir yomu v'lo kablan. He is a day laborer and not a kablan. Dilik nei bishvacha. Because he's paying him not by the value that is added to the object, but he's rather paying him for the actual work that is done, the per unit of work done, he's paying him. Because of that, he's a tchir yom and not a kablan. If it's a tchir yom, then it's not going to be a question for Ravasi. Because the reason that over here,
we pay them per press, no?
Right, per stump.
That's considered
yeah, because it's not about the value added to the kli. It's not about, he's not paying him for the value added to the kli. It's irrelevant. It sounds like it's irrelevant. We'll see in Tosfos in a second. It's irrelevant in how much value he adds. If he even adds tons of value, it's just he's going to pay him per stump. That's it. He doesn't pay him for the value.
You have chayatim that charge per stitch.
Right, so similar type of thing, right? That it's not.
But who's going to tell me that a mended beged isn't changed, or that?
It's not that. It's not changed. It's just that you're not paying him two different
your
ways
deal,
to pay.
Different deal.
Right.
The deal was per stitch.
Right. Exactly.
Per stitch.
Now, this is not about whether you can or cannot. You could, if you hand him a beged and say, "I'll pay you for whatever work you do," then that's a kablan. But if you're paying per unit of work that is done, then you're not hiring him or paying him for the increased value. You're paying him for the. Right?
Work.
You're paying him for the work that's being done. It's the difference between, when you hire a contractor to do work, right? When you hire a contractor in general, you ask him to give you a finished product, and then he charges you for that finished product, not for the amount of work that he put in there. Versus if you're hiring a plumber or electrician who's charging you by the hour, right? That's a different type of work. It's irrelevant what work he does. It's just about the amount of time that he spends there. Contractor, it's irrelevant how much time he spends. What matters is the finished product that he gives you. Right. It should be, right. At least it should be. He usually spends too much time and so anyways, that's the way Rashi explains it. Tosfos over here says he doesn't understand. Rashi in other places explains it slightly differently, which would make it even more so. So he says in Perisha Kuntras, and he says, Tema. Says, I don't understand. Mashallah the Makom Kom Hare Kabanu Velos Khiryom. Says, I don't know, I think in this case he's still a Kaban and not a Khiryom. Umekabel pirsha b'inyan acher. In another place, Rashi explains it differently. The agre libet vache kishibal the beit agardi bochim beraglay mitoch kli amayim. They used to do it in the water. They used to stomp on it, and you pay before this. Umio lo b'kavlanut askinan. We're not dealing with contracting el b'schirut, but with labor or paying for labor. Ben yesh biach, ben lo yesh biach. Karolu fi minyan b'tishot. Here Rashi adds a little different nuance where he's quoting it from the Gemara in Bavamitzia. Rashi explains it over there that the payment is irrespective of the outcome of the situation. And that makes it a lot better. Because right, with a kablan, you're basically paying for an outcome. You're paying for a solution or an outcome. And by a skiryom, you're paying for the actual labor irrespective of the outcome. So Rashi's adding another factor here, which is irrespective of the outcome, that is a skiryom, and so it says, that's what I classify as a skiryom. Kablan is that I'm trying to come to an end result. It doesn't matter how I hire to get that right result, that's always a kablan. Now it's interesting, that have interesting dynamics with things like plumbers and electricians. You hire them to get to a finished item, to an end, right, product, to fix the leak, right, to wire this thing in the house, yet they're charging you for a per hour rate, not for the finished product.
But they have to finish it.
Right, so that's the difference here. As Rashi would say, the Rashi that we have here would say that's already a skiryom. Because all you're doing is paying him per unit, per hour. That's all you're paying for. So this, that's still a kablan. Because of what David is suggesting. I'm still asking you to finish a job, and you must get to that finished job. And with an electrician and a plumber, between the difference here would be like what David's suggesting over here, that you might say, if it has to end up in a finished product, you've got to fix the item. Even though you're paying him on an hourly rate, maybe according to Tosfos, where Tosfos reads Rashi over here, that would be still a kablan. Whereas a electrician or a plumber, you paid him, doesn't matter if he gets the work done or not. Like, you say, you pay him, listen, you come and look at this, see if you can do something with it. If whether he gets the end product or not, I'll pay you for 3 hours. Then maybe that would be a schir yom. But that's, maybe a key difference between, right, the, or between the, way Rashi is in Bava Metzia versus the way Tosfos is reading Rashi over here. Alright, but our half a mean in the Gemara, the lo agre le biche, they didn't hire him to stomp, but he hired him to get to a soft beged or a finished product. Then it's Messiah the Rav Sheshes. This helps the position of Rav Sheshes. The Bomi name of Rav Sheshes. Kablanut, over la mishum baltalin, oin over. Are you over when it comes to kablanut contracting? Are you over on baltalin? Tolin or not, Brahma Rav Sheshes, over. You are over. By Kabbalah, Lema, the Rav Sheshes, Liga the Rav Asi. Seems like Rav Sheshes argues on the position of Rav Asi. The fact that you can be in violation of Baal Tolin in a Kabbalah Nusin contracting shows you that what does Rav Sheshet believe? That an Uman is not Kone B'Shevach Kli. That means that he's treating an Uman the same way he would treat a Shechir Yom. The only difference is that a Shechir Yom, you become obligated in his payment on a daily basis or an hourly basis. You become obligated in his money, depends how you believe Shechirut works. But nevertheless, you're obligated right away. A Kavlan, you're going to only be Chayav, a contract, you'll only be Chayav or become obligated in it when he hands you the product back. But once he hands you the product back, you're automatically obligated in his wages. It's not that you're paying for an increased value in the object, it's that you're paying for his wages for that period of time. No. I'll explain to you the case here. The case here is we're talking about a messenger. Messenger for letters. Messenger for letters, there is no question, there's no issue of kablanut shechir yom. A messenger is always a shechir yom because there is no kone b'shevach kli. There is just no way to add value to the object. The whole idea of a messenger is that he's dropping a product off. He's not adding value to the product. So if you look at it that way,
but
then there
letter,
is no...
A letter is worthless unless it's...
No, but you're not... The value of the letter itself isn't changing. The letter itself... Oh, it's that the letter's found here or found there. And that's what he's doing. He's just here to bring it back and forth. So this is... So based on this, doesn't matter in the Havamina, doesn't matter in the Maskana, right? The Gemara was thinking there is no... Uman and Shevach Kli here, because there is no Shevach Kli to talk about. Oh, we're talking about Uman. So you want to have a Kablanut and Tzchirut over there. When we're talking about Kablanut and Tzchirut, when it gets to the end, versus when you have to pay him immediately. And that'll be the only difference between Kablanut and Tzchirut here. And therefore, Rav Sheshet, this won't help Rav Sheshet, and this won't prove that Rav Sheshet argues on the position of Rav Ashi. Lema Kitanai. Let us say that this says that Mariam Achal Kitanayim. Aseli, this is the Gemara and Kedushin that we saw together. Aseli, Shiraim, Nizamim, Mitabot, make me bracelets, nose rings. She hands him raw materials. Ve'kedash, ve'kadesh lecha. And then I will marry you. And she hands him raw materials. She says, make me jewelry out of these raw materials. And I will marry you with the value that you are creating by making this into jewelry. Kevich Hassan, Mikudeshet. Once he's finished the product, he's Mikudeshet, Divri Rabbi Meir. She's only mikudesha once the money reaches her hand. So and then where it says, my mamon. What does that mean? The money reaches her hand. If you're saying the finished product, meaning the jewelry, reaches her hand, that's when she is married. That implies that Rabbi Meir Sabar oto mamon lo. That even when the jewelry does not reach her hand, you're still married. What are you being mikadesh with? If the jewelry never reaches her hand, then what is the ketzef kiddushin that he's handing to her? So that can't be explained, the explanation of the mamon of the chachamim. Elav, shita, my mamon, mamon acher. Other money. What does that mean that we're talking about mamon acher here? Sounds that the other money, what's the other money that's involved here? The payment or the compensation that he is receiving, the umman is receiving for the work that he did. So, v'savrua. And this is our assumption, or this is the underlying hanachot. These are the underlying assumptions of what we're going to say so far. So, kuli amma is schirut mitzchilatov. Number one, that schira or schirut runs a mitzchilatov. It's not just at the end, but just it runs from beginning to end, right? That is when your schirut comes. That as you work, the other person becomes obligation in your schirut. Udu kuli amma, and everybody agrees, that mekadesh b'milveh enu mekudeshet. If your mekadesh is alone, you are not mikudeshet. So then, what is the makokas between them here? We know from the Gemara and Kiddushin, we learned this together, that when you have tzirut mitzchilatov, that becomes the milveh. That is alone then, because if you are chayav to pay the wages up front, and then only pay at the end, then everything they did all the way along becomes a milveh, becomes a loan. And that loan can't be used to marry. That means that his tzirut, that his wages, are all milveh. If milveh ain't a mikudeshet, then how is she mikudesh over here? My love, the uman kone b'shevach kli kamitzligay. That's exactly what they're arguing about. Whether an uman is kone b'shevach kli. The Meir of our uman kone b'shevach kli. Rabbi Meir says an uman is kone b'shevach kli. So right, he can't be paid for wages. The wages are irrelevant here. The wages do not create the kiddushin because the wages are all a milveh. So he can't be talking about the wages. Must be that uman is kone b'shevach kli, and that's how he's getting compensated. He's not getting compensated as a laborer, he's not getting compensated as a sechir, he's getting compensated for being a contractor, for being adding value into the objects. And when he hands her the objects, and she accepts them as payment, that means that she owes him money for the value created in there, or that he is now paying her money with the additional value he created here, by then waiving his right to payment, he's giving her a value, and that's what the kedushin is here. And Uman is not kone b'shevakli. That means that the only thing he's getting compensated for here is his wages, his labor. His labor is mitzchilas mitzchilas. So if it's a milveh, milveh you can't be mikadesh with. That's the only thing he has to offer. No good. The kedushin are no good. So obviously now the Gemara has explained their machlokas about whether Uman kone b'shevakli. It's obvious how the Gemara can undermine that. The Gemara premise its machlokas on two anachos, on two assumptions. What are the two assumptions? Number one is that the schirah means schirah itself, number one. And the second assumption is that the mekadesh mevilva ain't a mekadesh. So if you want to suggest that the machlokas is not about uman kone b'shevakli, you just say that the machlokas is about one of those two other hanachot, about those two assumptions. That's what Gemara is going to do here. Nope, the kuli yama ain't uman kone b'shevakli. No, everybody holds an uman's not kone b'shevakli. Elohocha, b'ishna the schirah means schirah itself, come mitzvagay. They're actually arguing about whether this schirut means chalatov. Rabbi Meir Savar ain't the schirut ele basof. Rabbi Meir says that you only become obligated in the wages at the end of the labor. At the point at which the schirut is done, that's when you become chayav for the wages. That means that there is no milva here. Because at the time it comes due, that's the moment that he's mekadesher with that money. Versus Rabbanim Savar yesh the schirut means chalatov. Right, the Rabbanan believes that you become obligated all the way along, you become obligated
you
to Shkirut. At the end, you are a milveh. By the time you get to the last point of money, everything is a milveh. Milveh you cannot be a kadesh with. So that's the difference between them. It's about the Shkirut mitzchila v'yatzof. Right, if you remember, the Gemara distinguished, Rashi made this point in the Gemara Kedushin. What's the difference between being Shkirut all the way along? There's a milveh. And even when you get to the end, versus when, at the end, why isn't that a milveh once he says you're obligated in it? So if you hear Rashi, but here it talks about Kiddushin, to explain the difference between them, that if it's only in the sof, if the schirut is only about sof, came into gamra kol melacha, once he finishes all the work, she'en mitchayev tzkaro ela kol yachad, he only becomes chayev all at once, ve'ad mochela v'toret Kiddushin. And the moment he becomes obligated, he's mochela, and it becomes kiddushin, lo chashiv milveh. Therefore, it's never considered a loan. Right? So that's the difference again, that if it's building up towards the final state that you're chayiv all the way along, then every moment becomes a milveh until the final moment goes to payer. There already there's a huge milveh that's outstanding. And in the soap, everything becomes milveh. Whereas when you in the soap say that I'm going to only obligate her at that moment in the schirut, at that moment of obligation, I can make a determination to be mochel. Right? If I'm mochel at that moment, I was never a milveh. It's basically I'm handing her that value of the skirut at that moment. Whereas if I'm mochel, when I screw up his class, it means I'm mochel be milveh. I'm using a milveh as the kiddushin, and that I can't do. Now the other possibility, of course, is the other hanacha, which is the mekadesh milveh and a mekudesh. The other possibility is that that's your machlokes. Everybody agrees that there's schirut galax from beginning to end. They were arguing about whether they can be mekadesh with a loan. There may have been mekadesh milveh mekudeshet. Right? If you're mekadesh milveh, you are mekudeshet. That's the Meir's position. But on Saturday, mekadesh milveh ain't mekudeshet. So all the Gemara did at this point is, right, take the two hanachot that we had before, the two underlying assumptions to get the machlokes to be about uman kone b'shevachli, and just say, no, instead of machlokes being a uman kone b'shevachli, the machlokes is about those two assumptions. Either the assumption that a makadish mevilva ainu mekadeshes, or the assumption that that there is chirut means chilat sof, that'll be their machlokes. So from here we have no proof that there is a machlokes tanaim with regard to uman kone b'shevachli. Rabbi Amar dekulama yesh tos chirut means chilat sof. And no, the machlokas here is not about screaming tchilat sof. Everybody agrees that's the case. V'kuli yama mekadesh mevilva ainu mekadeshes. And everybody agrees that mekadesh mevilva ainu mekadeshes, the same way that we had it before, those two on our quote. And instead of machlokas here being about uman kone b'shevakli, v'kuli yama ain uman kone b'shevakli. Everybody agrees that an uman is not kone b'shevakli. Elaha, chaba ma'is kinan. What's the machlokas here? This is what you were asking. Oh, kuron shosifla nofech mishalo. He added in a little bit of his own. Now, nofech can either mean material, or I don't know, but the Torah is nofech sapir v'yalom. Nofech is a type of stone, right? But he added a precious stone. For some reason, that not only did he do work for her, but into these rings or these jewelry, he also added of his own materials. Therefore, when he's giving it to her, he is then giving her she owes him for the schirut, for the work that he did, plus she owes him for the raw material that he added. So now, when it comes to the schirut, that's a milveh. So that part of it is not going to work for the kiddushin. But the raw material that he added, she owes him real money for that. That's not a milveh. Maybe that could be sufficient to create the kiddushin. But their machlokes will be about exactly that. Remeir, it's never milveh pruta, data pruta. When it comes to a someone's mekadesh b'milveh and a little pruta afterwards, that the woman's focus is on the pruta. Why? Because she knows that she can't be mekadesh b'milveh, and therefore she focuses on the pruta, and it's a good kiddushin. But in Tarbe, milveh pruta data milveh. Then about a milveh, which is a much larger amount of money, and the pruta, which is a small money, the woman's really thinking about the kiddushin as being the forgiveness of the loan or the loan itself, and therefore she's not mekudeshet because the her das is on this milveh, and her das being on the milveh is we're in a mekudeshet, because mekadesh b'milveh in a mekudeshet. So the additional pruta doesn't help you here, because it's really in the context of a larger sum of money, which includes a milveh, and so that is going to almost sway her from looking at the pruta to look at the milveh. When she accepts the milveh as her kefir kedushin, it doesn't work.
So the simultaneity messes it up front.
Right.
It was just a second later.
If he separated the two items.
Giving the two, you know.
Right. Apostically, right. If he could separate the two items and it's mekadeshish independently, then it would work on the pruta side of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Plukta dahani tonight. This is the same as another makhluk tonight that we have. The tanya b'skarsha titi imcha enu mekudeshet. She says that the work that I did for you, the wages that you owe me, that doesn't work. No kedushin. B'skarsha etzeimach. For the wages that you're going to owe me in the future, mekudeshet, that works. Rabbi Matan Omer, b'skarsha etzeimcha enu mekudeshet. So whether it's future wages or past wages, according to Rabbi Nasan, it does not work. You cannot do kiddushin. The Tanakhah believes that past wages can't, because that's a milveh, but future wages you can be mekadesh with, because that's not a milveh, that's something that's going to come in the future. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Omer be'emet amru ben tzkar she'etzeimach ben tzkar she'etzeimach, whether it's past or future wages, ain't a mekudeshet, you're not mekadeshet. If he adds on some additional item, some other item, then it is mikudeshet. Now the Gemara says, alright, what's the difference between the Tanakhama, Rabbi Natan, and the Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, or Rabbi Yehuda Nasi? Ben Tanakhama, Rabbi Natan, between the Tanakhama, Rabbi Natan, Ika Benayu Schirut. Then we can understand the difference between them has to do with Schirut. Look at Schirut as being a milveh, right? Or if you look at Schirut as being something that is, right, in a basof. So if you believe that it's in El Basof, then you can say that my future wages, or the things that we're going to do, will be Mekudeshet. Past wages can't work, because this is already where he finished. He finished already, and it's not Mekadesher at the moment that he finishes there, that wages. It's a case where he already finished. If he already finished, now he's coming to her again later on and saying, listen, yeah, instead of paying me, you know, let's get married with that money. So even if you say it's El Basof, it's already a milveh. If it's already a milveh, then he can't be Mekadesh with it. But if he says my future wages that we're going to be mikadesh with, right? So then that works if you believe that is what? That there's chirut el basof at the end. Then there's chirut, then it works, because there is no loan outstanding. Whereas if you say chirut b'tchilat sof, even if he says it's future wages, it's not going to help you, because once she becomes obligated in the future wages, at that moment, it's already a whole thing's a milveh, right? It's already a loan. That can be the difference between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Natan over here. It's the difference between milveh or not milveh, but chirut basof or chirut b'tchilat sof. Ben Rabbi Natan, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Iker Ben Ayom, Milveh Pruta. Between Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, what's the difference between them? About a milveh and an additional pruta. Right? Because Rabbi Yehuda says that if you add in an additional pruta over here, what happens if you add an additional pruta? If you add an additional pruta, it works according to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Whereas according to Rabbi Natan, he says, no, it's only a mekadesh be milveh. So that we see is machlokas here between Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and Rabbi Natan is about a mekadesh milveh pruta. Does it work? Yehuda Nasi says yes, it works, because Rabbi Natan believes that tzivut is mitzchilat sof. Mitzchilat sof becomes a milveh. If it's a milveh, I can't be mekadesh with it. Yehuda Nasi says you're right, Rabbi Natan. But if she had nokach shalom, then he would be mekudeshet, because that's mekadesh milveh uve pruta, and that works. But Rabbi Natan says no, doesn't work. So I'll be the same machlokas. Right, how much more? Tabak, uman shekilkel chayav tishalim. Get a butcher. Really, here's a shochet that goes and shafts an animal. If he messes up the shechita, he has to pay for the animal. Maziku uposheyahu. He's a mazik and a posheyah, therefore he has to pay the money for it. Nasik omerlo, it's as if he said to him, shokhazi mikan, shech for me over here, v'shachadomikan, and he shefted him from a different place. Why is he saying to him that he's a mazik who is a posheu? The guy says a very strong lashon about the butcher. What does he mean he's a mazik posheu? Yamar maziku. If I just said that he was a mazik, there's only a chayim as a mazik when he's getting paid for it. Aval echad dekavi bichinam. He does it for free. Love that he wouldn't have to pay for it because then he becomes a shomer chinam in a sense, not a shomer sechar. Lo, kamash malan posheu. That he's a posheu. And since he's a posheya, he's chayav even when he does it for chinam. Because a posheya is chayav, right, even be chinam, because he becomes equivalent of a, in a sense, like a shomer sechar, in a sense that he's a shomer sechar, he's chayav for everything across the board, even for pshia, even for pshia, even more than a shomer sechar, he's chayav here for pshia.
So,
the truth
is
simply
because he's an expert, right? So,
therefore, Tina says, okay, so we'll see that in a second. Very good. Eitzvay, Rav Chama, your point is going to be, the Gemara's going to stand over here, Lishmua. And no say behemel tabach, v'nivla, someone gives it to the butcher and he messes it up, makes it into nevela. Uman patur. If he is an expert butcher, or expert shochet, he's patur. Hejol chayav. If he's not, if he's just a regular lay person, he's chayav. We have no saying schar ben ajot ben uman chayav. He pays him, he's chayav, whether he's a super, if he's a butcher or shochet, or whether he's just a lay person. So that is, right, a problem. So I'm a lay, lakir mochech. You are messing around. You are muddying up the waters. Your mind is muddied up. You are not asking a good question here. So another Rabbanan came along and asked the same question to Shmuel about from this brisa. I'm like, ask the shakal, find the shakal chaveris. You should get what your friend got. I mean, that's the same question that Rav Chama bar Gurya, where I said that is, you know, his head's mixed up and that he's wrong here. So to you, right? Kaminu luchu ana Rabbi Meir. I am explaining to you the position of Rabbi Meir. Rekamini toli Rabbanan. Are telling me about the Rabbanan. Amai lo dayak milai. So I don't know, either did you not, were you not careful with what I said, or my lo dayak mili, right, that, so are you not careful with what I said, or are you not careful about what you're reading, or what's said in the Mishnayot, or the Braytot? Shani omer, mazik hu, uposheyohu. I say that he's a mazik and a posheya. So now say, komer le shechot limikan, le shechot limikan. Man itlei hai svora. Who is of the svora that when you look at something, or someone gives you instructions, and you do not follow his instructions, right, that you are chayav, that's Rabbi Meir, that marmi baile, the mirmei anashe. You should have thought about this. You should have considered this possibility of an outcome. So the reason I say that a tabak is chayav, is that he should have thought of the possibility that things could go wrong here. It's a possibility that he could make it into nevela, could be a possibility that things won't work out, and therefore, he's responsible if he doesn't do the right shkizah, if he doesn't do it all properly, or if he doesn't indicate at first that there's that possibility. So, whereas the Breitzah that was talking, that you're asking me about an exodus of the Rabbanan, who say that a person doesn't have to consider all possibilities. They don't have to consider some possibilities, but not every possibility. So if an Uman does it, and he's not paid for it, in that case, we don't say to him he has to think of all these outcomes, and they don't think that he's chayav. So that's the Rabbanan, and I'm talking about Rabbi Meir. How could you ask me from the Rabbanan on Rabbi Meir? So I want to know, hi Rabbi Meir, who's this Rabbi Meir that he's quoting over here? Hi Rabbi Meir, it's this Rabbi Meir, it's not. Kashro ba'alav b'mosei rav, and now b'fanav k'ra'oi, since we had earlier in the Masechta, he ties up the animal and closes it up in front of him, v'yosav ezik, and then goes out and does damage, ben tamu ben mu'ad chayav, to Rabbi Meir. Meir says that you're chayav, even though what? Even though it's a tam. Rabbi Meir, remember, says that a tam requires a shmira me'ula. Right, a shmir mula, both for a tam and a muad. So, by a muad, I understand why he needs a shmir mula, right? Because he's a wild animal. But by a tam, why does he require a shmir mula? Why should I have thought of the possibility that he's going to break out of here? It's a short tam. So the fact that Rabbi Meir requires you to do a shmir mula even by a tam, tells me what? That I got to be extra careful. Even when that's not what's right in front of me, I'm dealing with a short tam, I still have to consider the possibility that he might break out, and I need a shmir mula. It says, that's something Christ will get. What are you talking about? We know why Rabbi Meir says that over there. Meir says it's about a drush in the pasuk. Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Meir argue about whether you need a shmir mehula or a shmir pechuta has to do with how you interpret the psukim. How you read, whether it's a miyad achamiyah or a ribay achariboy. Right? How do the psukim work over there? Because of that, that's why their position. Their position is not about a logical argument. Their position is about simply how to interpret the psukim. They can't prove anything about what Rabbi Meir thinks in that point. Elohim Rabbi Meir. Must be this Rabbi Meir. It's not. It's Volo Edom. Right, the tzvo shachor. He hired him to make it red, and he makes it black. Shachor, he hired him to make it black, the tzvo adom, and on the other hand, adom, and he made it, adom, and he made it into red. Then he, what? He gives him the payment for the wool. So what do you see? Rabbi Meir says he should have, right, thought of that, by supposedly messing things up. And, you see, Rabbi Meir says it, he has to think of all possibilities. It becomes a gazlan. When he messes up the, right, the dying process, then he becomes a gazlan, and he's kone at that moment, because he's a pesheya. It says, that's going to be a dying kalumine. Now over there, that case is different, because he's, but yadayim, he ruined it. As the Gemara knows that he did be a dying, it's not obvious to me why he did it. I mean, it could be that the case is that way. The Gemara assumes that over here it's be a dying, that he was posel as be a dying, meaning that he actually literally died it the other way. That he went ahead out of his way to do it be a dying, to die it the other way, and he didn't listen to the Balim, and that's why he becomes a posheya. And there again, we can't, prove that Rabbi Meir holds that you have to consider all possibilities or all outcomes.
So by there, you don't have the tzemer isn't moving by itself and the die isn't moving by the shafting. You have it.
Yeah, but you could have said that he
the hema can move and it's not the adayim.
Yeah, but you could have said that all he was doing was that he put it in the kli, he's mixing it, but he made a mistake. He made a mistake and he made it red instead of black. He made it black. He said that it's kaveh lishnot.
It has
that
to
he intention to change. No, an intentional decision to change the color, knowing that it was wrong. Alright, Hal Rabbi Meir, Rich Rabbi Meir, does not Nishra Kadov Lo Suka. He trips over, his cat breaks, and then he doesn't remove the pieces afterwards. Naflag Gamalo, the one he dies, Gamal falls over, and then he's not Mamidid afterwards. Rabbi Meir Omer Chayav, Vinizkan. If they do damage afterwards, he's Chayav. Chamimim Patur, Mitin Adam, Chayav Mitin Shemayim. Put Mitin Adam, Chayav Mitin Shemayim, become Milan. What are they arguing about? But whether someone who trips is a posheya or not. So Rabbi Meir says that when the guy tripped originally, he's a posheya. If he's a posheya, you can't be mafkir your stuff after a tfilat shia. And therefore, you're chaya for all the stuff that's scattered on the ground if you don't pick it up. On the other hand, the Chamin believe that a nitzkal is an onesh. Nitzkal's onesh, you can be mafkir your dvarav after a tfilat onesh. So if that's the case, what does Rabbi Meir believe? That you have to consider all possibilities. When you tripped in the first place and your kli broke, you should have been looking where you're going. You should have been taking care of what you're going. You see there, Rabbi Meir says you have to have in mind all possibilities. All outcomes are your problem. You got to look where you're going. So Amar Rabbi Barchan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tabach Uman Shekilkel Chayav. A Tabach Uman, a great Sheokhet that does something wrong is Chayav. Vafilu Hu Uman, Kedabchei Tzipori, even if he's as good as the Shochtim of Tzipori, which were super duper Shochtim, he's still Chayav. Umi Arama Rabbi Yochanan, okay, the Rabbi Yochanan really said this. Amar Rabbi Barchana, Uvda Ava Kameh, the Rabbi Yochanan, Mekinishta, the Ma'on. Right, there was a case in a base Knesset of Ma'on. Va'amalei Zil Aitli Raya, the Mamachit, the Tarnagolim, after Chav. He says that he's an expert. Latana Golim, after Ach. As soon as you prove that you get your card, you know, you get the license, your license to Katana Golim, and I'll let you go free. Right, says, Lokasho, Kanda Chinam, Kanda Tsar. The difference in Rabbi Yochanan is whether he paid him or not. If he paid him, then he's Chayav. If he did it for Chinam, as long as he's an expert, he's going to be Patur. Ki Adam Rabzeira, Rutsi Shiz Chayv Lo Tabach, Yabdim Lo Dinah. Person wants to put the Shochet on the line, should pay him up front. And if you want to make sure that the tabak, if he messes up the shechita, is going to be chayav, pay him. Don't let him do it for free. Pay him up front. Don't let it be that you're paying him afterwards for the item. Pay him right away and make sure that you know that he has a tzchar. If he has a tzchar, that being an oman does not help him over here.
You were supposed to put the restaurant behind the head there, he shouldn't
be involved.
He shouldn't have taken it on himself to do
right,
it.
Right, he doesn't belong.
Isn't that similar to Rabbi Meir's concept?
Right, he doesn't belong in Shkita. No, not that he should have foreseen it. No, not about foreseeing it. It's just that he doesn't belong in Shkita.
He argues with Shmuel and Rabbi Meir.
Right. So so Rabbi Yochanan's position at this point is that Uman is Chayav when you pay him, and he's Patur when he does it b'chinam. That's all he said so far. Rabbi Shmuel says, and Shmuel seems to say, and like what you're suggesting, and Shmuel argues, that Uman is always Chayav, whether you're paying him or nothing, from the implications, from what he said about the Chachamim, that he says that other price that says that an Uman is Patur, right, is about the Chachamim's position, and I'm in the position of Rabbi Meir, which implies that I, in the position of Rabbi Meir, would say that you're Chayav, even if you paid an Uman. which was either Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan are arguing. So that's what, that would be the conclusion for what we read so far. Meitve, Amoli chitim litchon, velo latutan, vatan subin amartan. Person takes it to the miller, to mill the wheat that he has. Velo latutan, before he milled them, he didn't soak the chitim, he didn't soak the kernels, to take away the chaff. Then when he ends up grinding them, he makes them into bran or whole wheat. Right, he basically leaves the shells are still in there. Kemach benachtom, he gives flour, good flour to a baker. Vasa patni polin, and he makes bread, but he makes the bread that falls apart. It's not a solid bread, a bread that falls apart. Behemal tabach, he brings an animal to a butcher. Vinivla, again a shochet, and he's mitznavelet. Chayav, in all these cases you're chayav, mitnei shehu kunoseh sachar. Because he's like a hired hand. He noseh sachar, which is a cup of dimyon, that doesn't mean that he is a noseh sachar, but he's like a noseh sachar. If he's like a noseh sachar, that means that he's chayav for pshia here, right? He's chayav for what he did, even though he wasn't paid. So, ema, no, read it, mitnei shehu noseh sachar. Don't read it that he is a kin noseh sachar, but rather he is a noseh sachar. And an expert is classified as a sachar. That's a Rashi. If you look at Rashi, kinos is sechar means avde chayav kinos is sechar. Afu pishe ino se, even though he's not getting paid. Am pshi v'lo onis kabishom mechinam nam chayav. So you'll be chayav even if he's mechinam, even if he's not getting paid. There's pshia here and he's chayav. Right? There's no in the end. Read it that he's literally getting paid, not that he's like someone who's getting paid. All right. How magrumenta the answer the kameit with the Rav. So magrumuta is a halacha hadrama, is a halacha in Shechita, about when he checks the animal, that if he goes out of the area that he's supposed to go out, outside of the tabaot that he's supposed to go, then our grandma, when he moved out, how much he has to move out, or how much he did wrong over here, Machlokes Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbanan, whether it's a treifa in the Gemara and Chulin. So they brought this Makumita, this thing, this case, of where the Shechita moved outside of the tabat that he was checked in, that's what the Kamei the Rav, came before Rav, Tarfei. The Rav says that it's a treifa, upatre the tabak, but on the other hand, he said the tabak is patur. Right, I mean the shlume, the maid, and that's the page for the nevela here. Pagubei Rav Kahana Ravasi. So Rav Kahana Ravasi bumped into this individual later on who Rav had passed in this way for. Baugavra, Amulei, Avi Bechor Rav Tarte. Rav did two things to you. So my says, my Tarte, what does that mean? He did two things to you. Ile me Tarte li Griusa. They did two bad things to you. What does that mean? The Baile Lach Shure. He should have said this hagram over here is kosher. It's not a nevela because of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. We pass from like Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda versus the Rachamim, and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda in this case says it is a kosher animal. Vitarfa, and he made it a treifa. Kirabanan, and like the Rabbanan. Vinami Kirabanan, and if the law is the Rabbanan, he buys a chuyuva the tabcha. That if he really passed like the Rabbanan says it's a treifa, then the shochet should be on the hook. He was mitnavel, he ruined your animal by doing hagrama, he should have to pay for it. I says, wait a minute. Mishari the Maimer, ki hai gavna. How can you say such a thing after a psak halacha? Va'adanya, we have a brisa, k'shiyatza lo, k'shiyatzei, lo yomar, ani mezakeh, v'chaverai mechaybin. Listen, buddy, really I wanted to make you patur. I wanted to say that you're okay, but the rest of the guys in the Beis Din, they're the ones who made you chayav. You know, how do you know that's asur to say that? V'amaseh, sh'chaverai raboi lai, what could I have done? Because they were more than me. V'azen emar, olich l'chil, megalestos. Hey, a person who does that is... Right, speaking inappropriately, letting out secrets that shouldn't be. Again, that's considered to be a no-no. That a Beis Din is not allowed, people on a Beis Din are not allowed to speak about how the decision came about and who's on who's which side of the decision in these situations. So it can't be that Rav Asi and Rav Kahana afterwards were telling him, listen, Rav is wrong, I would have said this, would have said that. Now the question here is really where Rav Asi and Rav Kahana, were they really involved in the din? Were they there when Rav gave the psak halacha and that's why there's a restriction on them? Or they bump him into him afterwards? If they bumped into him afterwards, then they're not undermining as part of the Beis Din. They're just saying, we would have passed an halacha otherwise. So maybe there's also restriction in that case. To say that we would have passed him as Rav after Rav gave a full psak halacha. Ela tarka the miyusa. Rav did two good things. What's that? Galo oklach safiki surah. First of all, he didn't make you eat a suffix of Eilach, because it's a suffix whether the lach is like Rabbi Yosef or Yudah or the Chachamim. And he passed him like, right? He passed him like the Chachamim to say that it's a treifa. Umanach, he suffix Zeilach. And he also stopped you from being maybe suffix stealing over here. Why? Because if you took money from the tabak, and the lach is really like Rabbi Yosef or Yudah, that's kasher, then you're taking the money inappropriately, because the tabak gave you a kosher animal. and you're taking money from him. So that's classified as stealing. It's interesting over here. They have sack of love cards, a fake, and you pay the inappropriately take payment. That's classified as gzeilah. It's marked. Hamareh dinar l'shulchanit. Person shows a coin to a shulchanit, to a money changer. V'nim tzarah, and the money changer says it's a good coin. Then you go out and try to spend it, and it's no good. Tani chado uman patur. Hejot chayav. If it was an uman who looked at it, he is the patur. If it was a hejot that looked at it, he is chayav. Tani idach, ben uman, ben hejot, chayav. So now the person says, whether he's an uman or a hejot, he's chayav. Amar Rav Papa ki tani uman patur. When is an uman patur? Kulun danku v'yisur, t'lo tzrich l'migmar klal. Then you talk about danku and yisur, who are two expert money changers. Danku and yisur was a super money changer, and therefore they knew how to change money. If they do it, they don't need to learn. They know everything that's going on. And therefore, if they make a mistake, they are pturim. So, whereas, if they were lesser experts, then the other bad practice says you are chayav. Lesser experts are chayav, and certainly a hedjot would be chayav. Now, the elevamai tahu, what's the mistake then? If they're such experts that they don't make any mistakes, they don't learn anymore, how do they make mistakes? That they made a mistake with a new coin that had just come out. Right, that the coin was then just put into or taken out of circulation, right? And then they put out a new tsura. They put out a new coin with a new image on the coin, and they didn't know it well enough. They were learning that coin. I mean, it's true they don't know anything, but they have to learn. I mean, that when new coins come out, they still have to get be aware, learn, or understand those new coins, and that's where they made the mistake. At that time, a new coin had come out, and that's what they made their mistake about. Right, I used to say Akta Dinara, the Rabbi Chia. This woman showed a dinar to Rabbi Chia. Amalah Ma'al Yahu said, yeah, he says it's good. He says, no problem, good coin. I see the Kameh, Machar I see the Kameh, the next day she comes around, Ramalay Yachazitei, Ramalay Bishahu. I showed it to other people, I tried to spend it, and they say it's not a good coin. Lokonophically, right, and I'm not able to use this coin anymore. Amalay Bilarab, Zil Khalfe Ni Allah, Bakatuba Pinkatsi. He says, go pay her, give her the money to replace the coin or exchange this coin for a good coin now. Right? And then write on my pad that this was a bad deal. Why are Danko and Isur experts at money changing? Why are they patur? Because they don't have to learn. Rabbi Chia also doesn't have to learn. Why? Because Rabbi Chia also knew coins. He was an expert in the coins. Why did he have to pay her over here? He says, "Chia, b'snim mishur tadin to avod." He did b'snim mishur tadin. Mikar din, he did not have to pay her, but he did b'snim mishur tadin. He did beyond the din. He says, "Pay her, so she's not upset, and she's not angry, she doesn't think poorly of me. Pay her, even though I'm not obligated to pay her." Okay, the Tani Rav Yosef, we have a position like this. Rav Yosef, Rodat lehem. Right, this is a pasuk that's found in Yitro. It says, "Rodat lehem et haderech asher yelchu ba." Right, ve'et ha'maaseh asher ya'asun. So what's the case here? Vodat lehem. What does it mean, vodat lehem? Zeh beit chayehem. This is, tell them what their livelihood is going to be about. Rashi over here, beit chayehem, says Talmud Torah. That they have to learn Torah, that's the beit chayehem. On the surface shas, Rabbi, that brings from Bava Metzir, another Rashi who says, beit chayehem is that you have to teach them an umanus. You have to teach them a trade. So they have a way to live. Et haderech. What's the derech? Zug gmilut chesedim. That's doing gmilut chesed. Yelchu, to walk on, zug bikur cholim. That is Bikur Kolim, visiting the sick. Ba Zugura, that is burying the dead. Et Amaseh Zadin, that you have to do din. You have to teach them how to paskan alacha. Asher Yasun Zulifnim Mishurat Adin. That's going even beyond the din. So Rashi over here breaks down the Gemara from Bava Metzir. Why isn't Bikur Kolim and burying the dead Gemilas Chesed? How are they separate? So the Gemara says that it's a case where Bikur Kolim is Ben Gilo. Someone who's in the same mago, and when he goes there, he's actually going to get some of the sickness. He takes away some of the sickness, but he gets some of the sickness. So therefore, it's detrimental for him to go to visit. Nevertheless, he does Bikur Cholim. He should do Bikur Cholim. Now, also, Bikvura is where it's Zakeh Menuk Fik Kvodo. Even though it's not the Fik Kvodo, he should still go ahead and do the Kvura. So there, in both those cases, there's no obligation with Gemilut Chesed, because it's detrimental to you, or it's inappropriate for you to do it. Nevertheless, there's still an obligation of doing that, Bikur Cholim and Kvura, despite the fact that it's detrimental or it's not Lifi Kvodo. The last thing here is this Lifni Mishur Tadin. When are you obligated to do this Lifni Mishur Tadin? Is it always that you have to go Lifni Mishur Tadin, or when, or not? So this is Tosus over here, brings a principle from the Rimi Orleans, that says, the Lo Shayach Lifni Mishur Tadin, El Badova Shacharim Chayavin, Vizepatur. The only thing that Tamei Mishur Din applies is that if others would be chayav and you are patur, I mean that generally someone who did coin changing would be chayav, he made a mistake. It's only because Rabbi Chia was such an expert, right, therefore he was patur. So then there's a Tamei Mishur Din to go ahead and pay her like other experts would have to pay her. That's when there's a Tamei Mishur Din. But if everybody was patur, there's no such thing as Tamei Mishur Din. Tosfos rejects that, and says Veinira, but that's not the case, that there isn't even a case of Tamei Mishur Din, even a case where everybody is patur. There's still an aspect or a din of Tamei Mishur Din. Or we'll stop over here.